702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
The show today, live from Karankua Zone 1, will... Today's election town hall meeting. Police used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse crowds outside Jocelyn Smith's court appearance. Sifiso Mkhwanazi found guilty of the rape and murder of six sex workers. The latest on Joburg water crisis. The mayor says there are lessons to be learnt. And shortlisted candidates for the deputy public protector interviewed today. All of that over the next hour.
This is the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Coming to you live from Karankua on 702
and Cape Talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk. Coming to you live from a community centre in Karankua, Zone 1 today, where if you've been listening to 702, you would have heard my colleague Clement Maniatella hosting a town hall for the past 3 hours. For our Cape Town listeners, to explain to you where we are at the moment, Karankua is northwest of Pretoria in Tswane. It is hot. It is so hot in Karankua. My sweat is sweating at the moment. So we're in this town hall, and it's just been emptied out because, of course, it was packed. It was heaving for the past 3 hours. And now everybody's outside in the midday sun. And what's amazing to see is there are all these political party representatives in their different political party regalia. And they're all talking to each other outside in the sun. Inside, there are dozens of lined up black, green and beige plastic chairs that are now vacant. So we are mopping up what has been discussed for the past 3 hours. We are also very aware that there are other big news stories happening today in Joburg. There are still many people who do not have water. I did try and doorstop Panyaza Lesufi, the Gauteng Premier, to ask him about that. He told me it's not for him to speak about that. It's for the mayor in Joburg to speak about that. I'm not sure I completely agree. We'll talk about that a bit later on in the show. And then, of course, in Frederiksberg, outside the magistrate's court, there's been a lot of activity. We've seen tear gas. We've seen stun grenades being fired as well. So we'll get into all of that during the show. If there's anything you would like to speak about, send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. Clement Maniatella, as you wipe your brow, we are...
I'm wiping sweat off my face.
It was and figuratively heated in this town hall for the past 3 hours or so. As you reflect on the discussions that you had, what do you take away?
So, no, we report a lot about service delivery issues on our shows every single day. And I think it's a different thing when you have to come and interface with the community. And I'm sure the listeners who have been listening to that, you heard how tensions were going high. And sometimes as the host or someone who's facilitating, you've got to allow yourself to calm down and allow people to raise their frustrations, because it's not every day that you have the Premier of Gauteng coming to your community to listen to you. There's a way you respond to the failures of government through the ballot. There's a way you respond perhaps in protests. But when you have an opportunity, which you have provided for the people of Karankua today, to have the mayor come, take their questions, raise their frustrations towards them, I think for me, that's a good tick that we were able to bring these powerful people that on a normal day would not ordinarily interface with the community coming here. But yeah, there are a lot of issues that they have raised. I mean, Alpha's story this morning, that's what we kicked off our special broadcast with. A police station that has to close its gates in the evening because of power cuts. And that speaks to the issue of crime, which has been raised here as well in Karankua.
We are often very critical of politicians for only appearing during election season. And we always say, I say it all the time, it's election season. Some communities would argue that the media also only appears during election season, and we come into areas like Karankua like this, and we listen to people and we give them a platform and we allow them to engage with the Premier and with the Mayor. Where do you see the value in that for residents here, and how do you walk away from a town hall like this feeling that people have been able to ask their questions?
So the first thing around being in communities, Mandy, I think as the Clement Maniatella Show, we've done probably around two, if not three, special broadcasts already this year. I mean, we were in Soshanguve about a month ago, going to speak to people about the issue of crime, which is something we had wanted to do last year. We've been going to some communities, but I do think we need to spend more time going to people and bringing those in authority to respond to their questions, because as platforms like 702, as media companies, we have at least not only this platform, but we've got the connections to speak to those that are in power, those that are in government, and if we can bring them closer to the people that they serve, because they don't come here. So Panela Lesufi, when they visit these communities, they come to campaign. And when politicians come to campaign, that's them giving speeches and telling the residents what their commitments and promises are. But what we do through these platforms and through many more town halls we'll be doing ahead of elections is to say, these are the people that have been coming here to campaign. These are the people that have been making promises. Have they met those promises? And what do you want to say to them? And I can tell you, it's not easy for politicians to sit here and hear someone say you are useless. So I'm always appreciative of them to be mature enough, for Panyaza to sit here and hear someone say, you've been useless over the last 5 years. For the mayor of Tshwane, Celia Brink, to sit here and someone says, you are bringing this metro to the ground. And I think there's a level of value that comes with not only the people here raising those issues with the politicians, but politicians as well, hearing the frustrations on the ground directly from the people, not from their councillors.
And we'll be doing more town halls in the run-up to May 29th, right?
Absolutely. So this was our first 702 elections town hall meeting, starting in Garankuwa. We're going to be moving to Soweto in the next couple of weeks, and then we're going to be moving to Ekurhuleni. But that's just the town halls. On top of that, we will be going to have conversations as well, doing outside broadcasts in other parts of Gauteng as we look up and count ahead of the elections.
Clement Panyatela, thank you very much. You can go and jump into an ice bath. There's one just outside waiting for you. No, you're going to have to deal with some more sun out here. But yeah, that's Clement Panyatela wrapping up the past 3 hours at the town hall.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Now, EWN reporter Alfred Ramashwana has spent some time in this community of Garankuwa. Two stories that really stood out. The one Clement Panyatela mentioned, and that was the police station that doesn't have electricity, which is just an indictment, really, on law enforcement and the rights of this community. The other is a story about a 29-year-old Garankuwa resident, Tabiso Tefo, who has not been able to find formal employment. He has spent years searching for a job. So what does he do now? And this is such a story of unemployment in South Africa. He has begun fixing potholes and is making a living. He has a jar full of coins that he gets as tips. And that's the kind of story that we want to highlight when we come to a community like that. So it's so important to do that reporting as well, but also just to get a sense of what happened earlier today. So Alpha, you're wrapping up what was discussed this morning. You've been spending some time with the community here. What was your sense of what people had to say to Clement today?
You know, my sense today and over the past 2 days that I've spent here in Garankuwa engaging with some of the community members here is that residents are very much angry about what's happening in their community. You know, not having water for months, not having electricity on top of that, surely is very frustrating for residents here in Garankuwa. And they've mentioned that the issue of crime, really, it seems like there's no political will from both the municipality, provincial government and national government to deal with it. I mean, Garankuwa is huge, it's massive, and only has one police station that is servicing people here. And however, you know, that police station is not working efficiently. As we've heard, Mandy, that police station closes its doors in the evening because they don't have electricity. They are using flashlights at night to certify documents. And you can already imagine how residents feel, or the confidence that they lack in the police officers in this place. Of course, the Premier, Panyaza Lesufi, came today and responded to some of the concerns that the people had to raise. And he did speak about the police station. And he said that they are working with many people, stakeholders, to make sure that there's electricity supply there. He mentioned that they are getting solar power to that police station. He's intervening. He knows it's not his jurisdiction, but he says he can't just watch people here struggle, knowing very well that there's something that they can do. But let's take a listen to what the Premier had to say about how he plans to fix some of the issues in this community.
Indeed, my friend. And that's the reason why, as a provincial government, we said, even though it's not our mandate to deal with electricity, we're not going to hold our arms when our people are going through difficulties with just related to electricity. And we go back to that matter. We've just appointed a new provincial commissioner for it. And I, on his agenda, was the Karankua police station. Provincial commissioner ensure that police station is sustainable electricity at all times. But besides that, ensure that there is a solar as a backup in case we got all other things. I'm proud that they finalized the appointment of the service providers who use solar and that there's sustainable electricity that is going to be provided to that police station. It's not about me, because you can't say it's a national mandate when our people are suffering.
So that's the Premier speaking there about the police station and issues with getting electricity there. Tell us about some of the other issues that came up today.
So today we heard the issue of street lights. You know, Karankua, as the residents have said, is a very unsafe community. Crime, street crimes, petty crimes, contact crimes are very rife in this township in Pretoria North. And people are saying that because there's no street lights, of course, the police are going to be unable to effectively deal with the issue. They can't see at night what's happening. They've also mentioned water issues in this community are rife. They are saying that there are residents who go for weeks, if not months, without water supply in their homes. And of course, electricity, like many other parts in the country, still remains a cause for concern here in Karankua. You know, they've boldly came and told us that you know, they are connected to electricity illegally. They are paying money every month to have lights in their homes illegally, paying 170 rand to have what they call izinyoka electricity connections. And they boldly said that to the political leaders who are here. And my sense is that some of these residents are not satisfied with what the political leaders had to say today. But let's take a listen to what this elderly woman had to say in front of Premier Panyaza Lesufi and Tshwane Mayor Silas Brink this morning.
We struggle with Amabone. We ended the Rizwala Highway. For Ricker Rupia Lake has community in the city of Tshwane. So Rikuba Juso, but Barbara, sometimes I'm walking 1 AM, facing 5, 6, 7, and 8. The Arabs keep it here, but we stayed for 3 weeks, Resinamis, who suddenly even a water truck. So Rikuba Hore, Premier, as you are here, Utadilo Sabat Bahara.
Our thanks to Alfred Amashwana, EWN reporter, for wrapping up this town hall and bringing us the issues that the people of Karankua are talking about in the run-up to the election.
Covering the issues that matter to you.
It's the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live from Karankua on 702
and Cape Talk.
Also representing here, not just political parties, but also the IEC, the Independent Electoral Commission, that has members here today. Of course, the voters' roll has been closed. It has also been certified yesterday as well. But let's speak about voter education and whether or not people are going to actually be voting. I was chatting to a security guard here who comes from Hammanskraal, and I said, are you going to vote? And absolutely, I'm going to vote. And that's important to make sure that people are aware of the necessity of voting. Clement Ntalelani is an outreach officer for Tshwane, joining us here. Clement, it's a popular name today. Okay, let me step over and come a bit closer to you with my microphone so that I can chat to you. So Clement, tell us about the work that the IEC has been doing in this community to ensure that people are educated about voting.
Yeah, thank you, Mandy, and greetings to your listeners as well. We have our community outreach team that has been educating, you know, our community in various wards, of Garankuwa and obviously across the whole of Tswane and the country about the importance of voting and also participating in electoral democracy, especially that now we are heading towards the polls. You know, the IEC prides itself of being a preeminent leader in electoral democracy, more so that in this 30th year of our democracy, we are going to be having our seventh general elections. And what is critical and important about this coming elections, it is the three ballot papers that for the first time voters would be issued with. And traditionally we are used during the national and provincial elections of having only two ballot papers, namely your provincial and also your national ballot. But for the first time now we'll be having equally your regional to the national assembly ballot paper, which is the third ballot paper that we have been out and about informing the various voters about. And obviously also traditionally we have had a provision of the law where a voter would, during the national and provincial election, vote at any voting station on election day. But this time around, for the first time, a voter needs to cause a submission or inform the Electoral Commission about their intention if they are not going to be voting at the voting station where they are being, where they are registered at currently. So that is the message that we've been carrying along, across various communities, structures, forums, or wherever people are gathered.
When you listen to residents of a community such as this one in Garankuwa, in Garankuwa View, in Zone 1, and you hear how disgruntled people are and dissatisfied they are with the politicians, we know that in South Africa there's a big voter apathy problem. We see it with the turnout over the past few elections and that decline. What anecdotally, what sense are you getting from people? Do you find that people want to vote, that they are registered to vote? What has your experience been here?
I think it is a frustration for a voter to be expected to vote, especially amidst a host of challenges that they're encountering on a day-to-day basis. But equally, would want to encourage the voters that voting according to the Constitution, it is the only value at which they can change the status quo. There is no other means of electing governance except by casting that ballot, except by having a say in who must govern, because these leaders who are now in government are the ones that voters are the ones who elected them into power. And I think the other message that we need to send out there is that voters need to keep their those that they have elected for accountable. And from the robust engagement that we've seen here today of community members holding accountable and questioning the premier and also the mayor shows the level of dissatisfaction, but again the responsibility that they have to hold those that they vote for accountable. So voting, though previously we've had not so much satisfactory turnout in our previous local government election in 2021, just over 35% voter turnout was experienced. And this time around, with the issues that are taking place, the frustration that the voters are encountering, and the fact that we've been relaying the message to the voters that voting is the only means to change the status quo, because over and above that, there isn't any other thing that a voter, a citizen who's eligible to vote, can do, to hold and to dictate the change in the environment.
Just briefly, Clement, before you go, when you walk down the streets in your sky blue IEC shirt, what do people say to you?
Well, people are excited about voting. But adversely, there are those that have mixed feeling around voting, and I think that's where our division find relevance in to inform voters about their doubts and miscommunication that they've had. Some voters would think that the IEC is another political party, and those are some of the interactions that we've had with voters and the mishaps that we had to clear up and the misunderstanding that we had to clear up. Sometimes we are accused to be aligned or to the specific political parties. Other voters are simply saying, I'm not going to vote vote, because I know that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know. But we must say that, you know, each and every vote counts. And if you don't go to vote, it means, you know, you are disregarding your responsibility as a citizen to make a choice on who must sit in those, you know, seats in the National Assembly and across nine provinces or in the provincial legislatures. So we're encouraging voters that they must own up to this democracy and go in numbers to vote on the 29th of May 2024.
Clement Ntlatlani, IEC Outreach Officer for Tswane, thank you very much for your time. So that wraps
thank
up
you,
our coverage here from Garankuwa. We are going to move into the other big news stories of the day as well. If you want to comment on anything, send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072 702 1702, 072 567 1567.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
12:29 on the Midday Report, coming to you live from Garankuwa today, where my colleague Clement Manyatela hosted a town hall a bit earlier on. We are going to get into the issues after the headlines about water in Joburg, also that court appearance in Frederiksberg, the mother of Justin Smith appearing in court today. So we're going to get into that. I must tell you, though, that the Gauteng Premier, Panyaza Lesufi, on his way out here in his convoy of vehicles, which included Ama Panyaza vehicles, I did try and stop him and asked him if he would chat to us and give us a comment about the water situation in Joburg, and he declined. He said that is for the Joburg mayor to discuss. I reminded him that Joburg is in the province of Gauteng, but he wouldn't comment on that. I think that he should have. And Premier, I know you're a listener, so you're still welcome to give us a call if you'd like to speak about it, if you'd like to give us a view on the water situation in Gauteng. You were in Tswane speaking about Tswane issues, so let's get a comment from you on the water situation in Gauteng. You've got my number. You're welcome to give us a call.
Covering the issues that matter to you.
It's the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live from Garankuwa on 702
and Cape Talk.
12:34 on the Midday Report with me, Mandy Wiener, on 702 and Cape Talk. We have been coming to you live from Garankuwa today, but I do want to shift focus from Tswane to Joburg now, and then we'll go to Cape Town and highlight the big news issues of the day. But let's start with the water situation, because we are well into 2 weeks now of a water crisis in Joburg. We had the mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, last night in crisis talks over this 10-day water outage. We've also had news about a valve, one valve that seems to have really impacted water supply. Can you believe it? So I did ask on social media in the last half an hour or so where people are watered in Joburg. And just to give you a sense of, well, where people are being watered, because not everyone's being watered, Bryanston has water, it seems, at this stage. Bordeaux South, low pressure, too low for a load of washing, been asked by councillor not to wash clothing. Blegowrie and Linden reservoirs are still critically low due to consumption. Just to give you a sense, Bordeaux South had water for a couple of hours and then the taps ran dry. Water back about 30 minutes ago, but the pressure is so low that you can't shower. It's just a trickle. And then lots of other areas as well that we are looking at. Randburg, still no water. So we've just had a statement from Joburg Water giving us an update. It says that the system update, Joburg Water, together with Rand Water technical teams, continue to reconfigure the system to boost flows, Linden 1, Linden 2, and Kensington B systems. So let's have a listen to Joburg Water spokesperson Nombuso Shabalala explaining.
Johannesburg Water, together with Brand Water technical teams, continue to reconfigure the system to boost flows to the Linden 1 and Blegowrie systems. Upon investigation on Tuesday, the 12th of March, technical teams discovered a bulk supplier valve had been closed, thus restricting supply into the system. The valve has since been opened, and this has assisted with building some capacity. The closed valve was, however, not the cause of the water interruption, which was due to an incident at the Akenhof pump station due to a city power outage. This affected many parts of Johannesburg and several other municipalities in Gauteng and the Northwest Province.
That's Joburg Water spokesperson Nombuso Shabalala explaining the situation there. I'm fascinated by the valve situation. I know that she says that it's not the reason. We know the Akenhof station was the reason for why this happened. But really, if that valve, just turning the valve, could have increased the flow, that is very frustrating. Well, as I mentioned, I did ask the Gauteng Premier, Phanyazi Lesufi, when he was leaving this town hall today, if he could give me a quick interview about the water situation in Joburg, and he declined. He said, that's for the Joburg mayor. It's not for me to speak about. The Joburg mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, has been speaking about the water situation, saying that there are lessons to be learnt from it. Well, joining us now is his spokesperson, Mlimandlela Ndamase. Mlimandlela, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. How concerned is the mayor at the moment about the situation with water in Joburg?
Well, good afternoon, Mandy, and the listeners. The mayor's concern about the water situation in Joburg predates this particular incident and outage that you've experienced now. He has been raising the point that currently Johannesburg has very aged infrastructure. We require monies that the city currently does not have to be able to finance new infrastructure and to be able to introduce new pipelines in certain communities throughout the city. But it remains a top priority of the city to ensure that whilst we maintain currently existing infrastructure, we are able to come up with solutions that will assist us to invest in new infrastructure as well.
And is the mayor satisfied with the way that both Rand Water and Joburg Water have been dealing with the situation?
Well, the mayor has been very concerned about how the situation relating to the outage has been dealt with. And just to explain it to your residents and to the listeners, the outage was based on a lightning strike at the Akenhof pump station last week Sunday, which was the 3rd of March. That particular outage was repaired within several hours of it having occurred. However, for us to be able to recover the system itself, unfortunately, it is a very large system. It is a complex system, and it requires very diligent efforts to be able to recover it, because as you would know, any irresponsible or sporadic pumping of water into the system at high pressure would result in further damages and further disruption of the system. So Rand Water and Joburg Water have been working flat out to ensure that we are able to pump water sufficiently, because some of the water we pump into the reservoirs, unfortunately, is being used as soon as it gets into the reservoir. So it is important that as you pump water, you are able to some extent throttle the water so that you can allow the reservoirs to build up capacity and thereafter be able to release to residents. And as the Johannesburg Water has explained, that particular process is what has taken us up to 10 days currently.
And how long do you think it might take, or what kind of information is the mayor getting about how long it might take until the supply is completely stabilized in Joburg?
Well, as we speak, the majority of areas in Joburg have access to water. The system has been stabilized. We are only left with Linden 1, 2, and Kensington B, which remain critically low. And if you look at how the infrastructure and the system is laid out, those particular reservoirs and systems are at the end of the system. So it is the current planning that within the next 2 days, by Saturday, we should have those particular systems stabilized as well, and residents would be able to receive and be able to have their supply restored. However, it does not mean that the capacity in the system will have fully recovered. So what we are trying to do, and what the effort and priority has been, is to ensure that the residents are able to access water, and once we get a stable flow to residents, we are then able to build up the capacity, which may require that during the evenings between 10 and maybe 4 in the morning, we are able to switch off the systems to allow the reservoirs to build up capacity and then supply. And again, that will take another couple of days. But the important issue is that residents must be able to wake up and open the tap.
Mlimandlela, thank you very much. Mlimandlela Ndamase, Joburg Mayor spokesperson, speaking to us there about the water situation. Some clarity there on how much longer it may take as well. We were also hoping to speak to Rand Water. They've told us that they are still in the process of finalizing a statement, so you should be able to hear that a bit later on in our programming and on EWN as well. So let me know what you think about that explanation. Are you satisfied with the way that the city of Joburg has handled this water crisis? Would you have liked it to have heard from the Gauteng Premier on this specific issue as well? And are you satisfied with the way that Joburg Water and Rand Water have been dealing with it? Send us a WhatsApp voice note and let us know.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
12:43 on the Midday Report with me, Mandy Wiener, still coming to you live from Garankuwa, where the town hall, the community centre here, has been cleared out and everybody is now outside. There's just a lone security guard accompanying me as we reflect on the town hall and the conversations here, but also having a look at the other big news stories of the day. So let's go down to the Western Cape now, where Jocelyn Smith, missing Jocelyn Smith, the six-year-old's mother, has appeared in court today, her mother's boyfriend also appearing in court, four people in total. Tear gas being used by the police, stun grenades also, barbed wire to try and disperse that angry crowd that gathered outside the Frederiksberg Magistrates Court. And police really having their hands full today as they try and deal with a very unhappy community there. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, has been following that story for us. Carlo, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Let's start outside the courthouse and describe to us what the police had to deal with today.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Yes, it's been quite an eventful morning at court today. Before the proceedings started, an angry crowd gathered outside court. They demanded to enter the court building, expressing anger at police's handling of the case. The court's decision today not to allow members of the Patriotic Alliance to form in court. Now, we know that certain leads, which ultimately resulted in the arrest of the accused, were presented to police quite early on. And what the community is saying is that police were slow in following up on those leads. We also know that the Patriotic Alliance has quite a big following in this community. And that's why they were angry at the court's decision not to allow the party's members to form court proceedings. What followed was that police had to use, like you said, stun grenades and tear gas to disperse the crowd as they tried to force their way into the court. Calm has since been restored, Mandy, and most of the crowd have now left. And then I'm coming back to the case. We spoke to Western Cape MEC for Community Safety, Regan Allen, earlier. And he had this to say.
Take note that the charges against accused number four has been withdrawn. I have been informed that there is no evidence linking that particular suspect to this particular matter, but that could change should new information come to light. We have further noted that bail has been abandoned at this particular stage. Our main concern remains is to ensure that Jocelyn is returned home unharmed.
So, Colin, let's go to inside the courtroom now and what happened there. So four people, including Kelly Smith, who, of course, is Jocelyn Smith's mother, her boyfriend and two others appearing in court today. But charges against one of the accused being withdrawn. Tell us about that.
Yes, so charges against Pumza Tsigaka have been withdrawn. Police saying that there's not enough evidence linking her to Jocelyn's disappearance. They have subsequently withdrawn those two charges of kidnapping and human trafficking.
So where to now with this case? I imagine it's being postponed and the bail application, that's been abandoned too.
Yes, so the three other accused have abandoned their bail application. What the state is saying is that they need more time to investigate the matter. They still have not received the forensic analysis of those items which were found during the search for Jocelyn. And when that arrives, the case will proceed. The matter has now been postponed to the 13th of May.
13th of May, sure. Okay, so that's quite some time away. As you mentioned, that search for Jocelyn is still continuing, right?
Yes. So speaking to Police Commissioner Thembisile Patakile, the question was put to him whether the search for Jocelyn has now widened to include other provinces in the country. He says right now the investigation is and the search is limited to the Western Cape. But as more leads come up, they will definitely, depending on what those leads are, increase and widen the search. For Jocelyn.
Carlo, thank you very much. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, speaking to us. They're bringing us the latest on what happened today, both outside and inside the Frederiksberg Magistrates Court, where tear gas, stun grenades had to be fired, police using barbed wire as well to contain a very angry crowd. And of course, Justin Smith, 6 years old, still missing.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
In the High Court in Palm Ridge today, 22-year-old Sifiso Mkhwanazi convicted of the rape and murder of six sex workers. So a big development in court today. Mongezi Koko, EWN reporter, following that story for us. Mongezi, good afternoon to you. Tell us about that decision handed down in court in Palm Ridge today.
Hi, Mandy. Well, it was quite a quick one. That's because Sifiso Mkhwanazi's legal representative, Boyo Makaduka, had other commitments. Now, what happened was that Judge Kasim Musa decided to sort of give a more shortened judgment about today. Now, all the charges that were brought forward, they are 22 charges of Mkhwanazi. He was acquitted of one of those charges, so that left 21, and he was found guilty of all 21, Mandy, with the exception of one. One of the charges brought forward was robbery with aggravated circumstances, which was then lowered to robbery, just plain robbery, theft. Now, another thing to note is that Judge Kasim Musa then ordered Mkhwanazi to a psychiatric facility. That's the self-contained psychiatric facility. That's for observation prior to sentencing him. He will return to a Palm Ridge Magistrate Court. Yeah, now that's the Johannesburg Magistrate Court, Johannesburg High Court, sitting at the Palm Ridge Magistrate Court on the 8th of May to hear exactly what the psychiatrist had to say after the observation, and then he'll learn of his fate thereafter. The charges that were brought forward, just to give you a sort of a summary of the charges that were brought forward, they include six of rape, six of murder, and six of obstruction of law.
Mongezi, just remind us, in this case, Sifiso Mkhwanazi confessed to his father about the fact that he had killed six sex workers, but he denied that it was premeditated. Just remind us what this case is about.
Right. So in between April and October of 2022, Mkhwanazi committed these murders, and that's when his father then discovered some of the bodies and eventually discovered all of the bodies and took him to the police station. Now, what happened there is that Mkhwanazi claimed he was coerced into a confession at the police station, which he didn't want to make, because that confession then led the state to believing that the murders were premeditated. Mkhwanazi's legal representative then refuted this, saying that Mkhwanazi was actually put in a corner to come out with these admissions, and it's not necessarily what happened. Mkhwanazi then made another admission to the murders, and this time he cited that he did not premeditate them. He simply committed these murders because he was scared of going back to prison. He was arrested in 2021. And he was acquitted of those charges. However, he says that he was so scared after committing all of these murders that he did it just to hide so that he didn't get arrested.
Mongezi, thank you very much for that. Mongezi Koko, EWN reporter, who is bringing us the latest there from Palm Ridge, where Sifiso Mkhwanazi has been convicted of killing and raping six workers. A very quick judgment today, so I'm sure we'll hear more about that. Also, that psychiatric assessment that needs to be done as well. But it's amazing to see how in some instances the criminal justice wheels turn so quickly, in other instances, not so much.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hello, 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 Mandy. It's Frank here. Mandy, I want to go and vote, but I don't have an ID. My ID was stolen when I was marked owing to high crime around that area. So I don't have money to do another ID. What will happen to me on the 29th? Of May, when is an election day, and I don't have the ID. At the same time, I don't have money to go and get a new one.
A good day, Mandy. It is shocking to hear that the Premier told you that he will not intervene in the water crisis in the city of Johannesburg, whereas the same mayor gave a warning to the mayor of Tshwane that he was going to intervene. He will even break the law to intervene in the city of Tshwane. Is that paranoia or a flip-flop? Thanks, David.
Hey, David, and this is important to firstly clarify, is that he didn't say that he wouldn't intervene. I asked him for an interview, and he said he wouldn't comment on it. He said that's for the Joburg mayor, for the mayor to speak about. And he didn't use the word intervene, just to, on a point of clarity there. But I agree with you. I don't think it's okay for the premier, and I know you listen, premier, so I'm okay with that. I don't think it's okay for you to be able to come to Tshwane and say we'll intervene and be willing to comment when Bree Street explodes, but not on this issue. I think that you need to apply the same across the board. And I would love to hear from the Gauteng Premier on the issue of water. Joburg said no water for 11 days now. And I think it is necessary for the Premier to comment on that. On the issue of your ID, so look, I can't give you advice specifically on that. I do know that Home Affairs is often open on election day for extended hours. I'm sure you'll find a sympathetic political party that will happily pay for your ID, but please don't accuse me of being cynical. But please try and make a plan. Get your ID. You've got to go out and vote.
Covering the issues that matter to you.
It's the Midday Report with Manu Wiener.
Live from Garankuwa on 702
and Cape Talk.
In Parliament today, the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services interviewing seven shortlisted candidates for the position of Deputy Public Protector. Remember, of course, the deputy became the public protector. So now we need a new deputy. Lindsay Dentlinger, EWN reporter, is following that for us. Lindsay, talk us through the shortlisted candidates and what is happening with these interviews.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, there's supposed to be, originally there were eight candidates shortlisted. Yesterday we saw that number had been down to seven, presumably somebody withdrawn. But it's been a bit of a slow start here, Mandy, because former public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane, as you know, sits on this committee as an EFF MP. And there were concerns raised this morning by the DA that she has connections to at least two of those candidates. One is just about wrapping up his interview now. He is an advocate, Shadrack Tabele, who has taken on her case against government to the African Commission on Human Rights pro bono. And another candidate who is sitting in the corridor just across from where I'm talking to you is an employee of the Public Protector's Office, whom Busisiwe Mkhwebane had at the time recommended that she be dismissed. That was subsequently overturned by a Labour court. And she's also somebody who testified against Mkhwebane in her impeachment inquiry in Parliament. So the DA arguing that there'd been a conflict of interest, and a lot of this morning has been impacted by this debate over whether Mkhwebane should recuse herself from these proceedings or not.
Lindsay, it's wild to try and understand this, right? So the public protector, the former public protector who was impeached as public protector, now sits on the committee that decides who the deputy public protector will be. There must be extreme concerns around this, if not even a potential court challenge.
Well, I think Parliament has never quite considered that a situation could arise like this. But here we are, and the legal advice from Parliament today, they seem to be a bit ambushed by the situation themselves. And so only a written legal opinion we expect only on Monday. The ANC insisting that the interviews go ahead and they will deal with these issues of a perceived conflict of interest later. The DA, of course, not happy about the situation, saying that they are participating under protest because they don't want to be the ones who sabotage this entire process, but really not happy about the situation. But Busisiwe Mkhwebane says, Mandy, she's here to represent the masters. She's a legal professional. She can be objective. She has no inclination towards any of these candidates. And in any event, Mandy, she says, her view at the end of the day won't count. It will be a majority vote of this committee as to who they recommend to be the next deputy public protector, and her views won't matter anyway.
Lindsay, I think you could write a book about the crazy stuff you've seen in Parliament. Thank you very much. Lindsay Dentlinger, EWN reporter. I don't think the architects, the authors of our constitution ever predicted this kind of scenario where the impeached public protector would be sitting on a committee that decides on who the deputy public protector could be, and ultimately that deputy could become the public protector, because that's happened in the past. It really is just wild.
The Midday Report.
So thank you to all of you for joining us today as we've broadcast live from Gerankuwa, and of course to those of you who also joined us on 702 for Clement Manyathela's Town Hall from 9 until 12. Thank you for being part of the conversation. We will be doing more conversations like this, more town halls in the run-up to May 29th and the elections. And as I've mentioned to you, it has been hot, hot, hot in Gerankuwa today. The community hall here in Zone 1 has now emptied out. The midday sun is blazing down as the cables are being rolled up and the chairs are being stacked. And everybody is reflecting on the conversations that we've been having here. People still tweeting in response to those conversations, saying, reminding me on the way out of Gerankuwa today, outside George Macquarie Hospital, to watch out because of the fact that a robot is needed there. It's chaos because there's only one way in and one way out of Gerankuwa, and that's via George Macquarie Hospital. So I'll be hitting that road along with all of my colleagues.